and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. About a year ago, on the 23rd of June of 2020, Beijing introduced a national security law in Hong Kong. This in response to the mass pro-democracy protests that had turned violent. Now, the law had essentially reduced Hong Kong's judicial autonomy and made it easier to punish demonstrators and activists. It criminalizes secession, subversion, and collusion with foreign forces, with a maximum sentence life in prison. Now, it's a year since the law was enacted, more than 100 people have been arrested under its provisions. So why exactly is Beijing so bent on crushing dissent in Hong Kong? And what does it mean for the city's future? Tonight, we're going to be discussing this with Victoria Hoy. She's an associate professor in political science at the University of Notre Dame in Indiana. She studies contentious politics and Hong Kong's democracy movement. She's also testified at the U.S. Congress and has written for many reputable publications, including Foreign Affairs, the Journal of Democracy, and The Diplomat. Victoria, a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Victoria, if I may begin with the headlines that we're seeing coming out of Hong Kong, you know, things, headlines that say city of protest has been silenced or democracy is dead in Hong Kong, and coupling that with activists who have raised concerns that Hong Kong, that the Hong Kong of 2019 and the Hong Kong of even 2020 is very different from the Hong Kong post the passing of the stringent national security law. And I'm just wondering, Victoria, how do you understand the Hong Kong of today to be like?
Hong Kong today is a very sad state in a way that, you know, the airports, the flights leaving Hong Kong, especially going to London, they're all filled. And then a lot of people, they complain that, you know, if we decide to stay for now, then essentially every other night we're having farewell dinners. People live in fear. You also have people who have wiped out their social media presence, unfriend people who are still activists, and also making sure that some of the remarks that they said earlier are completely erased from memory so that the police cannot really search, you know, look for evidence. It is very scary. And at the same time, you also have the only print pro-democracy newspaper was forced to shut down last month. And the entire opposition is in jail or already arrested, if not in jail and denied bail, but they are in exile. So every single person in the opposition is gone. And people who work for the government, not just civil servants, but also judges, they are made, and district councillors, they are made to make pledges. And because the government said that, you know, there's this kind of like leaked news that the government is going to disqualify people who are pro-democracy. And if that is the case, those who are disqualified would also have to pay back all the benefits and housing and rental subsidies and everything from day one. And this also triggered a massive exodus of district councillors. So this is a very difficult situation when everyone is like, you know, do we leave? Do we stay? What can we say? What can we not say?
Victoria, when we look at the protests, I think one of the things that struck many of us outside of Hong Kong was just the sheer volume of people on the streets. I mean, we're talking millions of people. And when the calculation was done, some people said 1/7 of the Hong Kong population or more were out on the streets. What about them? And this is, you've written about this. This is going to be a problem for Beijing. It's not just the activists, it's the people too.
This is exactly why I think we are seeing this immense crackdown. I call this essentially a whole of society onslaught. It is a war on the society, on the people of Hong Kong. In fact, Steph, so you mentioned, you know, millions of people. Hong Kong's population is about 7.4 million. On June 9th, 2019, 1 million poured to the street. A week later, 2 million poured to the street. And on August 18th, another 1.7 million. So, and if some of these figures could be a bit inflated because, you know, you cannot literally count everyone. But what we can also tell is the figure. the number of people who participated in the district council elections on November 24, 2019. About 1.7 people, voters, voted for pro-democracy district councilors. It is actually for this reason that these guys are now subject to disqualifications if they do not themselves resign. And this is also why Beijing is rewriting all the electoral rules. They know that it is not enough to lock up all of those who are troublemakers, who are known leaders. But there are about 2 million people who provide all kinds of support, who would vote for these people who still have the courage to risk everything. They are also trying to silence civil servants, medical workers who provided medical assistance as kind of these alternative frontliners during the protests, because many people got injured. And so many medical workers volunteered. Also firefighters, also social workers, lawyers. So this is pretty scary in a way that the national security law is so harsh because it is targeted at not just the known opposition figures, but the entire society.
Right. So can I ask you specifically about the new security law? I mean, it's so wide ranging and it's made it so much easier for Beijing to punish protesters, reducing Hong Kong's autonomy. I'm just wondering how this law plays into, or how to read this law in relation to Hong Kong's mini constitution, the basic law. I mean, does it supersede the Hong Kong constitution, which, you know, promises free speech and rights to protest and rights to organize among many rights it provides for?
Exactly. I think this is essentially the problem, is that the national security law takes over, replaces the basic law. So the national security law, it criminalizes secessions, subversion, terrorism, foreign collusion. But let's look at the terrorism, what exactly it means. So people who protest by blocking the road, by causing damage to traffic lights, that counts as terrorism. And not just people who do the act, but also people who provide tools, people who transport these guys afterwards, people who provide a venue, a room for these people to talk about, you know, what to do, or people who provide shelter, or even sometimes unknowingly, for example, there's several cases where people are arrested because they are taxi drivers taking people that the police wanted to the airport. And so they themselves got arrested. And so this is what the national security law looks like. It says that it still, abides by the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, except that toward the end of the national security law, it also says that if there are any discrepancies, if there are any differences, then it is this law, the national security law, that will supersede everything else. And also it is important to keep in mind that the basic law very clearly states that Beijing security state bureaucracies and agents cannot interfere into Hong Kong's affairs. What the national security law does is to allow state secret agents, the public bureau agents, to just openly operate in Hong Kong. They now occupy two huge hotels as their offices, and with a US dollar 1 billion budget just for this year, 2021 to 22.
Victoria, what is the role of Carrie Lam's government, the government of Hong Kong in this whole scenario that you paint? How important is Carrie Lam's government in playing the role of a conduit for Beijing's own agenda?
Yeah, so Hong Kong, again, the basic law promises Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong, that it should be Hong Kong's own people ruling Hong Kong, not Beijing, people from Beijing, except that Hong Kong has really been ruled by Beijing appointees. They are people from Hong Kong, but then they're Beijing appointees. This has always been the case. But since 2019, it's become so obvious that Beijing doesn't even trust its own appointees anymore. And so you can see that the Hong Kong police officers, especially in 2019, there was this very infamous case of white-shirted thugs attacking passersby passengers in the Yuen Long Station. And afterwards, the number one, two then at the time, he said, oh, I apologize to the people of Hong Kong that, you know, whatever we did, we fell short of Hong Kong people's expectation. Immediately after, the Police Officers Association condemned the secretary, the chief secretary, the number two in command in Hong Kong. Who are you to apologize on behalf of the police? We do not. If you want to apologize, you step down. You know, don't tell us the police forces what to do. And I think from that moment on, it became obvious that Carrie Lam and her government, civilian government, really was not in charge. And now we have that Chris Tang, who was in charge of the Yuen Long's district at the time. He was first promoted to be the commander of police, and just recently also promoted to be the chief, to be the security bureau. And then the former security bureau chief was promoted to be the number two in command. So the guy who earlier apologized, he was forced to step down. So this is like, you still have Hong Kong people ruling Hong Kong, but they listen directly to the Beijing security apparatus.
Right. Okay. There's still so much ground to cover in our conversation, Victoria, but we're going to take a quick break. Let's come back and continue this conversation. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to Consider This.